Tomorrow, it's expected that Pfizer is going to ask federal regulators to expand the authorization of the company's COVID-19 booster shot to include all Americans. Now, this comes after emergency use authorization for a children's version of their vaccine last week. And more than 500 sites are online in the Commonwealth to deliver those doses to kids. And again, we're talking kids 5 to 11 with that. We've heard over and over again from public health officials, health experts, vaccination is our way out of this pandemic. Well, we're headed into the colder weather. Thanksgiving's around the corner, indoor gatherings. Are we close to getting out from under this with these moves, with what's ahead? Let's ask Dr. Shira Doron. Dr. Doron is an infectious disease physician, hospital epidemiologist at Tufts Medical Center. Dr. Doron, welcome back.
Wonderful to be here.
So I want to start with boosters. We've talked to you a lot about them. And I suspect that there will be some people who will hear, wait a minute, people can already get Pfizer boosters. What is it that Pfizer is asking for? So remind us, who right now is qualified to get a booster under the guidance by the FDA and the CDC?
Well, it's a lot of people, but it isn't all people. So it's everyone who got J&J. So everyone 18 and older who got J&J, and no one under 18 has been authorized to get that vaccine. And then for those who received Pfizer and Moderna, it's anyone 18 and over with comorbidities, and those 18 and over who have institutional or occupational high-risk exposure. Now, early on, the CDC, after the first Pfizer authorization for boosters, the CDC was using some very specific language about who should get a booster and who may get a booster. And so within that broad category, there are those who they really recommend it for and those who they sort of allow it for. With the approvals of the Moderna or the authorization of Moderna and J&J, most of the messaging has really dropped that language, I think, for simplicity's sake. And so, of course, now there is the consideration to expand the authorization beyond those eligibility groups.
So you're 28, you work from home, you got Pfizer or Moderna the first time around, you don't have any asthma, diabetes, obesity, you are not yet eligible for a booster, and this move by Pfizer is seeking to give you the chance to have a booster too.
That's exactly right. And, you know, there are a few reasons why that might make sense at this point in time. And, you know, the ones that have been raised are that effectively the current criteria, eligibility criteria, do encompass almost everyone in this country except that type that you just described, a young, very healthy, work from home type. And, you know, that really just leaves out this small group who may want it. They may really want to avoid a case of mild infection, even though they're not at risk for severe disease, hospitalization, and death, because being sick and being put out from, you know, your activities for a 10-day period of isolation can be very difficult. Exposing your unvaccinated children can be very difficult for everyone involved, obviously.
And so would you encourage folks, should this go forward? And again, Pfizer is going to ask federal regulators to authorize this. We're not there yet. Should federal regulators accede? I can't quite figure out the word that I want. Say yes. Would you advise people in those categories to take that extra step?
I think the other thing that we know now that boosters have been now that we've been giving boosters here and elsewhere for a couple of months now, is that we now have safety data on boosters, real world safety data, and it is very safe. And so, you know, your question, to answer your question, we've talked about this before, we do have a public health messaging problem. Mm-hmm. What are we trying to achieve with the vaccination campaign? Are we trying to prevent severe disease, hospitalization, and death? In which case the answer is no, we don't need to authorize boosters or give boosters to younger, healthier people. Or are we actually trying to prevent all infection, if possible, with vaccination? I think, you know, the statements that I've heard from FDA officials and White House officials, et cetera, in recent weeks have sort of led me to believe that the national vaccine plan is really trying to be geared more toward the latter, toward preventing any infection, if possible, at least with one more go around of boosters. Now, if it turns out that these boosters only raise our antibody levels for a few months again, and that that protection wanes again, and that we become susceptible to mild infection again, then I think we need to revisit that at that time. And we need to ask ourselves as a society, how often are we willing to do this to prevent, you know, essentially what is virus in the nose, what is for most people at this point a common cold-like illness? You know, is this worth the resources that we're putting into it?
And it sounds like you're saying, Dr. Daron, we don't know yet. We don't know yet if this is a one-time booster or, like the flu, you're getting your COVID shot every fall.
We don't know if this boost will be the boost that we need to keep those antibody levels high to prevent both, you know, nose infection and systemic organ infection, or whether we will keep having the that upper respiratory protection wane. It isn't really like flu. Flu mutates so quickly that you need an annual shot in order to prevent even the severe complications of influenza. In this case, the issue is really that what wanes is that protection against asymptomatic and mild infection much, much more so than the protection against severe disease, hospitalization, and death. That being said, the Israeli data are showing that the booster program is protecting younger populations against severe disease as well, to a lesser extent, but to a detectable extent. And that's another reason why it's being considered for a broader age range right now.
All right. You brought up younger populations, and that's where I want to go next, because, of course, you and I are talking about the booster, right? But that is happening at the same time that around the country and here in the Commonwealth, we are beginning to roll out in earnest now vaccinations that were authorized for emergency use, Pfizer vaccinations, smaller dose for kids ages 5 to 11. You may or may not have seen that the Boston Globe is reporting just today that Boston school officials announced the school district is shutting down the Curly K through 8 school in Jamaica Plain for 10 days due to a rising number of COVID-19 cases. And that's across multiple grade levels and classrooms. I think we all thought and hoped that we might no longer be in that place. I'm sure as people hear that news, they will say, is this the beginning of some kind of surge again? Is this because kids haven't been vaccinated yet? What do I think about this? And what does this mean for where we are in the pandemic? Now, again, you may not have even heard that news yet. But let me simplify by saying, where are we today in this pandemic? Are we dead in the middle of it on the back end, but we're still going to see some spikes? We don't know because we're headed into the colder weather and we don't know what this year is going to look like.
If there's one thing we do know about this virus, is that we don't know what it's going to do next. It is so unpredictable. And, you know, in the beginning, we used to talk about the models all the time. And you'll notice that we rarely talk about the models anymore because they are always wrong. We have so little understanding about what this virus is going to do and where it's headed at any given moment. So, you know, I think what we were able to show here in New England is that even in the face of a surge of cases due to a much more highly transmissible variant, we were able to keep hospitalizations and deaths relatively at bay, a much more flat or small increase in those numbers. And so immunity will do that for us. We are unlikely to ever see a surge of hospitalization and deaths that parallels anything we saw during the first two waves. But that doesn't mean that we won't see hills and valleys for years to come that are probably seasonal in nature, so more so in cold weather, that may be related to new and different variants that could be more contagious yet, variants that could be immune evasive. So I don't think we are, we're certainly not, you know, past the point where something bad could happen, but we are very well protected by vaccination.
Based on what we know with our current vaccination rates here in the Commonwealth, with what we know about the science of risks for various age groups, et cetera, parents who hear that news about the Curly school today, I think they're going to ask, are my kids safe in school? On balance, are kids in the Commonwealth safe in their in-person learning?
Absolutely. There is no zero risk. But what we have seen from now what is nearly 2 years of real-world data with different approaches in different countries to in-person schooling, with much of the world having actually had full-time in-person school without masks through various surges of cases, is that in general, the children have fared well. And of course, children do get very sick with COVID-19 and die. And that's why the vaccine was unequivocally authorized for this latest younger age group. But that the risks and benefits overall of education and schooling for these kids, both now and in the future, favors them going to school, even in the face of a circulating virus and an ongoing pandemic.
So we've talked before on the show, and you and I on the show have talked before about people's risk tolerance. And there can be a gap between sort of what public policy says, what the science says, what individual risk tolerance is. I'm thinking about masks in schools here, thinking about the fact that, you know, in the last mayoral debate before she was elected, mayor-elect Michelle Wu said masks aren't coming off in Boston public schools. And then last week we had Governor Charlie Baker say when a school reaches 80% of its population, you know, faculty, teachers, staff, students vaccinated, they can choose to take masks off. Right there is two different public leaders looking at the same information and making different decisions. Is that the way it's going to be for a while, that it's just going to depend on the risk tolerance of a particular community and the discretion of a particular leader? Or could we get to a point foreseeable, right, like, you know, this academic year, where there's a pretty good consensus about what's safe and what's not?
I've been struggling with that question myself. I don't know how we get people to a place where they can agree on that question, because people have such strong feelings on both sides of that argument. People feel on one side that, you know, what really are the downsides of masks if they prevent some transmission in schools and outside of schools? And, you know, that we want to avoid things like the story you just told me about a school closing and children being sent home to remote learning, which we know is harmful to them. And on the other side, you have people who feel very strongly that masks are interfering with their children's learning and their social development and their language development, and that they are, you know, low risk by virtue of their youth, that they are now getting vaccinated, that having an off-ramp, an end game to the masks and other mitigations that are being used in schools is actually incentive to vaccinate. I'm hearing more and more, why should I vaccinate my child if they're just going to have to do all the same things and be subject to the same restrictions anyway? So that's a real concern that I have. But I don't know how we find that common ground, given that making masks optional for each child and each family doesn't seem to be going over well, partly because we messaged so strongly, especially in the early phase of the pandemic, my mask protects you and your mask protects me. So people don't want to give individuals the choice on this matter. And I think that we are going to see some rising levels of divisiveness and anger over the next few months as we see districts choosing and not choosing to take advantage of the 80% vaccination mandate waiver option.
All right. That is Dr. Shira Doron, infectious disease physician and hospital epidemiologist at Tufts Medical Center, friend of the show over these months with Ask the Doctors. Dr. Doron, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you so much.